Welcome to Tech It Out, where we bridge the gap between geeks and non-geeks. Get ready for engaging expert interviews and hilarious anecdotes from our hosts, Brendan Patrick and Jimmy Ansara.
Jimmy, you know what grinds my gears?
No, tell me. What's that, Brendan?
The phrase, trust but verify. It's an old phrase that I heard a lot when I was in the service, you know, particularly in the Cyber Corps area of the service. But in the private sector, it doesn't really translate, because to an end user who may not have cybersecurity at the forefront of their mind, they hear trust and that kind of opens the floodgates, right? It really should be zero trust all the time. The second a little red flag goes up in your head, it should instantly be zero trust as the first response. Which leads us into our main topic of the day, cybersecurity best practices for small to mid-sized businesses. This is a huge topic of conversation in today's tech landscape. And I'd like to go through and just kind of rattle off a couple of best practice ideas that we here at Team TriNet practice with our clients. And, you know, not necessarily to be the cybersecurity authority in the space, but just things that we practice here and things that we know work. So what are your thoughts on cybersecurity best practices? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, you know, there's a few different things that come to mind. It's not just one element that you need to follow or include in your cybersecurity plan. But the first one that comes to mind for me is employee training. I am under the mindset that a educated employee is your best employee or best way to combat threats or malicious activity towards the company. So running some sort of security awareness campaign with your staff and running them through, you know, what's out there, current scams, current trends, getting them, you know, familiar with everything that's out there is really one of the best ways to combat threats and everything that's currently out there.
Yeah, Jimmy, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, a well-trained employee is your first line of defense against these kinds of things, right? So as far as, you know, not necessarily to outline like a training cadence for somebody, I mean, what are we really looking at as far as end user training? I mean, what's the recommendation for making sure people are at the very least aware of like the most common types of, say, phishing attacks?
Well, you know, we use a platform that kind of gives the end users the ability to watch videos or videos that are easy to consume, like 1 minute quick videos that are designed to really go over the most common trends that hackers are using to exploit email or networks or just overall trying to, you know, compromise an account. Another big tool, or one that I'm a big fan of, is phishing simulations, and educating end users on how to identify a spoof or phishing type email. In most cases, you know, you can do that by identifying the URLs that are within that email, or the grammar, or the type of email address that's being used to spoof maybe a contact that you're familiar with, but the email looks off. But essentially, you know, a combination of some exercises, some fake emails that you can potentially use through many different platforms, or easy to consume type videos that highlight current trends and threats.
Sure, sure. Okay. So from a practicality standpoint, I mean, even outside of the realm of just email correspondence and email communications, if we were to give the listeners, you know, maybe you are a small to mid-sized business owner and you're concerned, or there's a growing concern for this type of thing for your company and your employees, just your organization as a whole. If you were to give them two pieces of practical advice, they could take this away from the podcast today and relatively quickly implement it into into their IT infrastructure, what would that be? You know, whether it be firewalls or robust spam filters on email, email tenants, or what are your first recommendations?
Well, one thing I want to point out, there's a huge misconception out there that small businesses are, excluded from being hacked, or, why would a hacker want to take my business's information? And I like to, when I talk to clients or customers of ours that kind of come at me with that statement, I always fire back at them that, small businesses are generally the ideal candidate to be compromised or hacked by a bad actor.
Yeah.
They consider small businesses as low-hanging fruit because in most cases, they're not well protected. They don't have a lot of the initiatives that are in place. And for me, for a small company that's just starting out that doesn't have a lot of infrastructure in place, the two biggest things that you can do to protect yourself is enabling multi-factor on your email. And in most cases, if you're using like a Microsoft or a Gmail type solution, it's already included. You just got to enable it. I would strongly recommend MFA. It's a huge deterrent, especially if you can use an app opposed to an SMS. And then the second thing would be complex passwords and not sharing passwords and keeping those really secure. A complex password, 12 characters or more with special characters, is almost unbreakable and really protects your company and protects your accounts at the end of the day.
So some of the more common cybersecurity threats that we have identified, here at TriNet, and some of the things that we look out for the most. I mean, it's got to be mainly the phishing, the email phishing. It's the most common attack. I mean, what was the stat? Between 800,000 and 1.2 million attempts every week in the USA.
Sure.
At least attempts.
I can see that.
That's just attempts. Hopefully, most companies or most people are doing what they can do to protect themselves against that kind of thing, or they're at least aware of these kinds of attempts. But I mean, man, they get more and more complex as time goes on. I've seen ones that as an IT professional myself, I've almost been fooled by a couple of times. And if you really aren't paying attention, you can fall into kind of a pit.
Yeah, I mean, they're really sophisticated nowadays. I mean, compared to how they were 1 to 2 years ago. I mean, looking at these phishing emails, I mean, they're taking pictures or signature blocks from other companies that you may be familiar with working with, trying to trick you in any which way they can to get you to provide your credentials or click on the link.
Even yesterday, even here at an IT company, just the other day we had Bill, our Podcast Nation president and, head honcho over here, get an email that said it was from me. The display name said it was from me, Brendan Patrick, which is quite odd. And when he mentioned it to me, I was like, oh, did I get got somehow? No, turns out they just had my name. No matter where they pulled it from, LinkedIn or, Facebook or, somewhere along those lines, I'm sure.
Website,
but sent him an email, which essentially was asking him to amend my payroll information and send my paycheck to a different financial institution other than, what I have set up here.
Definitely.
At TriNet. And that's been a common theme, especially the last couple of weeks. I've seen these tickets come in where it's essentially the same exact format of email. I don't know if somebody's just got a copy and paste shop with a bunch of names on it, but
I mean, a lot of times they like to look on LinkedIn or the company website and pull the CFO or somebody's name off the site that other employees would be familiar with and try to send those out as them so that they could try to get somebody to fall for it. I mean, I get easily 3 to 4 emails or phishing attempts, you know, a week, if not more, you know, the ones that slip through the spam filter. And it's just, you know, like I said, they're just becoming so much more sophisticated nowadays. It's, you know, if somebody who doesn't know what's out there, it would be so easy for them to fall victim to one of those attempts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes back to employee training. You know, I just happened to be on a call with Bill moments after he got that email, and right away he told me about it. I was like, all right, you know, yeah, go ahead and open a ticket. We'll get that taken care of. So phishing, by far the most common thing. Ransomware is also a super common thing, but most case studies are showing, and I'll have sources cited for this. This was something that I was looking into over the last couple of days preparing for this podcast. Most cases of ransomware start as a phishing attack or a spear phishing attack.
Mm-hmm.
The second they have some kind of access to your network in any way, now it's full-blown ransomware, malware, you know, what have you, Trojan horse attacks, you know, all this stuff that, you know, you don't really think of outside of, like you said before, these bigger organizations, but small businesses are a lot more vulnerable than people realize, because it is low-hanging fruit. They are a lot less likely to have robust cybersecurity initiatives in place.
Sure. I mean, a lot of small businesses, you know, depending on how large they are, you know, if we're talking about, you know, operations or companies that are anywhere from 5 to 20 people, they may not have, you know, privileged accounts or files that have permissions set for only certain people to get into them. So, you know, a bad actor does get into one of those devices and they have a file share that's completely open. You know, at that point, it's field day for the bad actor to go in there and, you know, unleash their ransomware or whatever malicious files that they want to throw on the machine once they have access. So making sure you have the right safeguards in place is crucial. So outside of the training and a complex passwords and MFA, I mean, there's another slew of initiatives that could be put in place, you know, online backup or even an on-premise backup. But as long as you're testing those backups regularly and making sure that they're working, that definitely is a huge safeguard to have, really, with protecting against a ransomware. Because at that point, if you have a good solid backup that's recent and you're able to restore from it, you know, you can totally avoid having to go into a paying a ransom or even having negotiations to pay the ransom if it cripples your business in that sense.
Yeah. And, you know, cybersecurity is its own podcast topic. I'm sure there are shows out there that only cover this type of subject material. But hopefully today, our listeners have some practical takeaways on how to better protect themselves in the ever-changing cybersecurity landscape.
Tech It Out is brought to you by Podcast Nation. To learn more, visit us at podcastnation.com.
Tales from the Help Desk. All right, Jimmy, so I have a tale from the Help Desk. So this segment, we're either going to be pulling stories from our own experiences on our own Team TriNet Help Desk, or, you know, perusing the internet, or for you, the listener, if you're an IT professional and you have a story that you'd like us to share on the podcast, send it in by all means. But as we get into this, if ever word to ticket that you just had no idea what the hell was going on?
More often than not.
Like, absolutely kerfuffled, confused to the maximum extent. I had a ticket a few weeks ago, and the ticket description was just, hey, my webcam and my speakers are not working for this Teams meeting that I'm supposed to be on right now. Nobody can hear me. I can't hear them. They can't hear me. Probably just, you know, quick driver update, maybe a system reboot, something like that, and we'll be off to the races again. No, I jump in and I see that Teams is pulled up, and I have the end user on the phone, and I'm kind of just walking them through a couple of troubleshooting steps, and no idea what's going on. I can't get anything to work. I'm checking for driver updates. I'm restarting Teams. I'm, you know, looking through any possible, just anything that I can think of to get this camera working. I finally go into the device settings on the workstation that I'm, you know, remotely connected to. And I just pull up the camera on the device settings. And I can see the webcam capture. Well, you know, what it's capturing. You know, the picture that is up on the screen right now is just an empty office. So I asked the end user, we'll call her Jill. I said, Jill, where are you right now? Oh, I'm sitting in front of my computer. It's like, okay. So that's really odd. I'm looking at the camera right now and I don't see you. And she's like, yeah, it's just an empty picture of my office. Like, why would that be? I just ask her, you know, Jill, where are you physically right now? Are you in the office or are you working remotely? Oh, I'm working remotely. So our remote connection software, if you jump into a session where somebody has an RDP established with a computer at another location, you can't necessarily tell that right away. If you connect while they're remotely connected, that's just what you see. So yeah, she's RDP'd into an office computer at her physical office location from a personal workstation or a mobile workstation, a laptop, what have you, from home, using an RDP to connect to her office PC and then join a Teams meeting, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
half an hour or more of looking at updates, device configurations, trying to figure all this stuff out. I'm finally like, oh my God, you know what? Yeah, of course they can't see you. And you know, sure, there are ways to make that work, right? Like adjusting the local resources and what the remote connection sees when you do remote in, but you know, more often than not, it's a huge pain in the ass. We don't bother, you know, setting that kind of thing up, right? It's just, hey, here's your connection to your machine. But people, if you're going to do Teams meetings, use Teams on your local machine, on the machine that you are physically sat in front of.
I could see where, you know, the convenience, they're already remoted in. I'm sure they're accessing some files that aren't easily accessible over their laptop from home or the VPN. So they're in this remote desktop and they just, you know, they see they got a meeting, they click on join and boom, it opens up the camera on the remote device opposed to the local. And, you know, I've run into that a few times. It definitely is, you know, one of those aha moments when you do realize that, oh yeah, you're not in front of that computer. Right. Where are you? But, definitely try to utilize those local resources. And I think even if you try to pass through, I don't even think there's a way to do the webcam portion of it. I know you can get the audio to pass through the local resources. Yep. But yeah, I think that at the end of the day, if you're on a laptop, try to make sure that you're using that Teams from the local laptop opposed to your remote session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, virtual meetings and, you know, remote working, you know, that's going to be its own episode down the line. But yeah, there's definitely, there's best practices and, you know, ways to just make sure that things work 100% of the time when you are working remotely. So we had a question. We like to get audience participation where we can. And we did get a question that kind of circles back around to, you know, some of the items that we discussed earlier in the show, specifically regarding phishing attacks or phishing attempts. So this question, not a lot of detail. I'm not really sure if they just, you know, didn't want to give us ins and outs of, you know, who they were or, you know, where the email came from. But really, the question was just posed as, hey, I received a suspicious email. How can I tell if it is a phishing or scam attempt? And Jimmy, you had mentioned a few good ways to indicate quickly or identify quickly what is and what is not a phishing or scam attempt. So the first answer, obviously, just blanket answer before we get into any more detail, is that it is so crucial to exercise caution with an email that you think may even be 1% suspicious, right? It goes back to that phrase, trust but verify. No, the second you think something is suspicious, zero trust policy has to be put in place. And then you verify. So zero trust, then verify. Don't trust, and then verify, if you will. So what are, and we'll go back around to some of those tips that you mentioned earlier. What are some dead giveaways that something is a phishing attempt?
I typically, the first thing I like to look for is, you know, the email, the from address.
Yes.
Not necessarily the display name, but the actual address. Because a lot of times that display name will look like somebody you know, but when you look at the address, it's a Gmail or a Hotmail or some sort of free email account or just an email that's completely off from the actual person that you're expecting that message from. Another part of it would be the grammar within the actual body of the message. You know, a lot of times these spoofing or phishing emails have punctuation in the wrong spots, broken English, and it's just a kind of a giveaway that, you know, something is amiss with the email itself.
Right, especially if you do know the person and you've talked to them in the past, you've had some email correspondence with the real person in the past, you'll know more or less the way that they type and then the kind of, you know, what their level of grammar used in an email, you know, hopefully, you know, business professional and all that. But, you know, if not, it could be a little misleading, but yes, grammar and that actual from email, dead giveaways right away. This is stuff every time we get a phishing attack and somebody's asking me, hey, is this spam or scam or phishing? I'll always just call the user and I'll look at the email with them and show them, hey, you know, these are some things that you can check on your own. And of course, forward the email to your help desk every time, no matter what, right? So that email address can get added to your spam filter and you don't have to worry about repeats from the same offenders over and over again. But yeah, those are the two dead giveaways. Also, if you see weird attachments, right, like HTML attachments or HTML attachments, right, that you know are going to lead you just to some random web portal or potentially could be a harmful file that somehow made its way through your spam filter, you can't just be clicking on things, especially from a suspicious sender, right? We've seen this plenty of times, and this will be another tale from the help desk. Maybe next week I'll have something involving, you know, clicking on a non attachment and what can happen and really the dangers that people need to be aware of. But again, yeah, check the front email.
To add to that, you want to make sure if there is a URL or something that is clickable, hover your mouse over it, and in the bottom left, you can see where that's going to take you. In a lot of instances, you'll be able to identify if it's a valid URL or if it's you know, going to take you to somewhere, you know, that you shouldn't be going.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that they disguise those URLs with hyperlinks and things like that, oftentimes, as you said, hovering over to see where this click is going to take you is absolutely crucial. And then again, always forward the email to your help desk. Always let them know, hey, I got this today. Can we add this address to our spam filter? Can we just block it out?
If you do click on the link or you do provide your credentials, when say you do click on something and it brings you to a Microsoft page or a Gmail page and you put your passwords in and nothing happens, you need to report or let your IT department know as quickly as possible, because the longer you wait, the more time you're giving that bad actor the ability to get into your account and do, you know, who knows what, whether it's gathering more contacts or more victims that they want to send emails to, or actually looking at sensitive information that you may have stored in your email. If for whatever reason you do happen to click on something, report it ASAP. And at least I know from experience, you're not going to get in trouble. They just want to make sure that they fix the problem or get it taken care of before it spreads or becomes a bigger problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we'll just call it what it is. If you click on one of these links and you type your password in and then, like you said, nothing happens, you've been compromised. That's what it is. Your credentials have been fully compromised at that point. So again, yes, report ASAP as soon as possible. All right, Jimmy, now it's time for just the tip of the week. And with that, we have regularly update your devices, all your devices. You know, we remind our end users on a pretty regular basis to check for updates. If there are updates available, run them. If it asks for a reboot for any reason, if your computer's literally notifying you, hey, you need to restart because you have updates waiting. That is something that you need to make time for throughout the day. At some point in the day, you need to just get it done. Don't let them sit, especially on these more critical updates, right? Windows feature updates, BIOS updates, security functionality updates. These are things that should be prioritized. And it really, if you're getting that notification, they need to be done same day if possible. If you're uncomfortable running the updates by yourself, open a ticket, reach out to your IT people, to your help desk, to your MSP, whoever it may be, have them take you through the process of getting these updates done. But it's one of these things that we have noticed that your device is not update compliant is another day that you are potentially at risk for other outside, you know, cybersecurity threats and other outside bad actors and those kinds of factors. So again, just keep your devices updated regularly. Put it on your calendar just to check for updates and run them. That's what I've done personally with my own personal workstations and company workstations, and it seems to be quite beneficial.
Yeah, I would second that, and even go further, and you know, any apps that you have on your computer outside of just the Windows or the Mac OS updates, you know, making sure if you have Java or some sort of Adobe program or really anything that you're running any updates when it's prompting you. And if there's any mission critical devices, you know, see if your IT team can set up some sort of sandbox environment so that, you know, some of these updates can be tested prior to pushing out. That way nothing breaks. If you know, in some cases we've seen that, but those are far fewer than the instances where the patches are fine. So.
All right, Jimmy, thanks for the talk today. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. We will catch you next time on the Tech It Out podcast.
We want you to get involved. Share your questions, comments, and ideas by emailing asktrinet@teamtrinet.com. Text or leave us a voicemail at 248-946-5885.